Thank you, James, and good evening, everyone. Like I was saying earlier, my name is Bob, and I'm just over here in Tigard, not far from the Zendo, but because of health reasons, I'm not able to attend there at the Zen Center. But Domio asked me if I could handle giving a presentation of some sort, a discussion at least tonight, and I said, okay, sure. And she said, "We'll pick something." And I said, "Oh, okay." And so, oddly enough, I picked something out of the Shobogenzo Genjo Koan. In other words, right out of what we did tonight in our chant. But I'm taking a deep dive into a particular paragraph in that piece. So, Mick has kindly given us the. So, Mick, is that the show? Is that the Genjo Koan? Okay. It looks different than what you had before. Presenter book. Oh, there it is. Okay, yes, that's the correct one. Okay, cool. So, for those of us in the cloud, if you would open that up in your browser, that would be a great help. All you really need to see is the first couple of lines. Tonight, I just want to discuss this small portion. It's the, I'll just read it to you. When one first seeks the Dharma, one strays far from the boundary of the Dharma. When the Dharma is correctly transmitted to the self, one is immediately an original person. That always intrigued me because I didn't understand it. I'm not certain that I still don't understand it. I'm not certain that I do understand it. This is all by the founder of Soto Zen, Master Ehe Dogen, back in the what we would think of as the Middle Ages. About the he was born in the year 1200, common era. But I want to give credit to Domio's podcast. She has a multi-part podcast called Zen Studies Podcast on this Genjo Koan. It is the source for much of this information tonight. I looked at a number of different sources, and believe me, that her source is by far the most clear and cogent way of explaining many of these things. In fact, most of the things I ran across, she had a better explanation. At least it was better for me to understand it. So I would recommend that if you haven't already looked at that, to take a look at least the first couple of episodes. She's also discussed this particular part of the Genjo Koan in the third of her episodes on the Genjo Koan. But first, let me kind of preview what all we are going to discuss tonight. Domio wrote in her podcast that this is a famous text from the Zen Genjo Koan. The author of this relatively short text, an essay really, is Ehe Dogen, like I said, a Japanese Zen master born in the year 1200. He was ordained as a Buddhist monk at age 13 and eventually traveled all the way to China to get answers to his burning spiritual questions. When he got those answers, he went back to Japan and established his own monastery, where he taught a form of Zen that was called Kaodong in China. I think I got that pronunciation correct. And it came to be called Soto in Japan. Dogen was a prolific writer. Yes, very prolific. The Shobogenzo. This is volume one of four. These are not thin books. These are major tomes with lots of things to read. And they're all very interesting to me, at least. Producing close to 100 dense and poetic essays like the Genjo Koan, along with other texts. Ironically, Dogen's writings fell into obscurity not long after his death and have really only become popular again within the last 100 years or so. But today, his teachings are revered throughout the Zen Buddhist world as deeply profound and eloquent. Genjo Koan is the first essay in a collection of Dogen's writings called the Shobogenzo, or The Treasury of the True Dharma Eye. Genjo Koan is also one of the most popular and widely studied of Dogen's essays because he, as Dogen's writings go, it's pretty down to earth and accessible. That said, accessibility is relative, and the meaning of Genjo Koan is still not immediately obvious to someone unfamiliar with Buddhism, Zen, and particularly with the poetic imagery used by Dogen and by Chan or Zen writers in general. And even once you know a particular passage is trying to say something, really understanding it for yourself is, of course, another matter entirely. Decision point here. The reason I pause is that my plan was to hand out the chant books, but I'm not sure for just two sentences we need to have you reading the chant books. So I think if you'd like to read along, please hand out a chant book, go get one there in the Zendo, or open up that PDF in the chat. I think it's still there.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yes? Question?
We're good.
Okay. So the second paragraph from the top on page 50, like I have here, it just says, when one first seeks the Dharma, one strays far from the boundary of the Dharma. When the Dharma is correctly transmitted to the self, one is immediately an original person. Okay. Now I found another translation for that same piece that says, when people first seek the Dharma, we are far removed from the borders of the Dharma. But as soon as the Dharma is authentically transmitted to us, we are a human being in our original element. That's by Nishijima and Cross in 1994. Oh, by the way, for those of you who are new, Dharma with a capital D means Buddhist teachings, or at a deeper level, truth. With a small d, Dharma is just things as they are around us. But comparing these two translations, I was struck by the notion that why don't these kind of match up better? Why are they so, a little bit different each way? Well, this takes a bit of explaining. Language is an evolving thing, changing over time and between people. I had to realize that the Genjo Koan was set down in the year 1233 in ancient Japanese. Dogen was adept at writing in a poetic style. He was trying to illuminate concepts and ideas that were difficult to understand in common human terms. Imagine how difficult it is to fully understand the 1368 English of the poet Chaucer and to translate it into modern American. Some of us, like me, have studied Chaucer, and I, for one, still struggle with it. And I am far closer to Chaucer in culture and language than I am to Dogen, especially since I don't speak fluent Japanese. I have enough to get into trouble, but not enough to be well understood. You will find it helpful to keep an open mind about the meanings the translators chose in modern English. At times, I suspect they chose words whose meanings include variations that we may not be familiar with. So let's look next at the Okumura translation, the one that's in our chat book, of the first phrase down to the comma. When one first seeks the Dharma, when one first seeks the Dharma, okay? It looks straightforward to start with. It might also be translated as, at the time a person initially searches for the truth. Okay? So, for example, say, I am searching for the truth of the world or the truth of my life. So far, I haven't found it yet. The rest of the sentence says, one strays far from the boundary of the Dharma. Okay. So it seems that Dogen is indicating the Dharma is like a country or state with borders and boundaries. And initially, I'm wondering about, wandering about, far from the edges, boundaries, or the borders of the truth. I'm nowhere's near the truth, nowhere's near the Dharma. And I like what I see he's doing here, making the truth or Dharma almost a solid reality rather than some nebulous mental construct. So, up to this point in this little story, I have not yet entered into the realm of the truth or Dharma. In fact, I am far from the border, the edge, or boundary. I wonder, can I sense that it is even out there somewhere? Maybe it is just a tall tale someone told me long ago. Okay, so I choose to accept that the Dharma is out there somewhere and that I can get the help I need to find it. Or more accurately, learn it or understand it. The first phrase of the sentence seconds, I'm sorry, the first phrase of the second sentence, when the Dharma is correctly transmitted to the self, this drops the concept of a physical Dharma with edges or boundaries. There is a level of questioning among the scholars I could research about the meaning of the word transmitted here. It is the same word in both of these translations. In some Zen lineages, it means a meeting of the minds between the teacher and the student. In others, it means the authority to teach. In still others, it means a special understanding is given, sent, handed, or transmitted to the student. For now, let's just accept this transmission as handing someone a password for access to the information about the truth of the world. It has to be the correct password. It has to be authentic. Okay, so now let's look at the other end of the transmission, transmitted to the self. So, what is this self? Is this our ordinary self? The self we think of when we consider who we are inside this body of mostly water? Or is this self some electrochemical construct which operates this body of mostly water? Or is it something else entirely? Actually, Domio has an entire podcast on just this thing, the emptiness of self. It's for your reference, it's number 151, the emptiness of self and why it matters. I don't know really how to think about Master Dogen's transmission to the self in light of what others teaching on the emptiness of that same self. It wasn't what I expected to run across in preparing for this discussion. Not all the answers are in books and in research. Indeed, not all the answers are. So let's set this or that aside and tackle the next segment or line. One is immediately an original person. I understand the plain language of immediately. However, I feel I need to explain an original person. Here I really defer to Domio because she really said it best when she wrote, "As for the second part of this verse, when the Dharma is correctly transmitted to the self, one is immediately an original person." Shohaku Okamura helpfully points out the original person is a translation of the Japanese honbon min in realizing Genjo Koan. He explains hon can be literally translated as original, true, root, or source. Bon means part, portion, and min is person. So this word, which has the same meaning as original face, refers to a person who is one with the original source that exists before karmic conditioning. So, please continue to read and study Dogen's writings, giving yourself permission to go slow and savor every word and phrase, drawing out the understanding and meaning as you would when you sample a favorite dish, which is well prepared. So I open this up for discussion.
Those of you in the Dirt Zendo, you just take the questioner's seat if you'd like to.
Hi, I'm Stephanie. What I got from that reading was that the divine is in us at all times, and that all we need to do is search for it. The challenge with that is that we're not really, even though all like philosophies and religions and spiritual programs say the same thing, basically, is that we have to look within to find the divine. We block ourselves sometimes from doing that, because either we're not ready or there's other things going on in our lives that aren't allowing us to do it. And then when I feel like when we're actually ready to let the divine in, everything just like, it's just this beautiful thing that happens. But it's just like with anything in life, we need to be ready to allow it to come into our soul, to our body and our mind. So I thought that reading was really good. Thank you for sharing that. That's all I have to say.
Thank you, Stephanie.
So I have a question about how the writings of Buddha's practice came down to us. And I realized that he wrote nothing down. Confucius wrote nothing down. Buddha wrote nothing down. Socrates actually wrote nothing down. And Jesus Christ didn't actually write, but he had things written about him somewhere very quickly after he died. So my question is, in that after Buddha died, in that interim, and it was several hundred years, when nothing was written down. How exactly did the information that Dogen is talking about get transmitted so that it could be written down?
Wow, that's really quite beyond the scope of my my understanding. That's a very big question. I do know that the Buddha's close disciples, Ananda and others, were adept at memorizing every sermon, every talk that he gave, and they did write those down afterwards. And that's what I know about that part of the Buddha's history. So I wish I had a better answer for you, but I really wasn't prepared to go into that depth of historical documentation. Another question or comment? Hi, Erica.
I am curious why you decided on this reading for tonight. What is it about it that, you know, spoke to you or you wanted to elaborate on?
It seemed like a good thing to talk about because we all start from someplace in our study of Buddhism and getting comfortable with the teachings. And this seemed to be one of the most accessible pieces of Dogen's writing, because it seems very straightforward when one first seeks the Dharma. So when we first start learning and seeking out the teachings of the Buddha, one strays far from the boundary. Well, if you don't know where the boundary is, you might bump into it, but most of the time you just don't bump into it. And so you're wandering around in the forest and you can't find the truth, you can't find the Dharma, if you're wandering around like that. And this starts with that as a premise, that you just, it's, you first start out wandering around looking for stuff, stumbling into things, making mistakes and so forth. It's a recognition of where we all start when we start studying the Dharma. I was going to continue by saying that when the Dharma is correctly transmitted to the self, one is immediately an original person. When a person receives the Dharma in its entirety, and by receiving it, I think of it as fully internalizing it all, the precepts, everything, then you become the best person that you can be before the karmic effects of your life take hold. So it's like the Christian concept of being reborn.
I'm gonna take advantage of my bully pulpit with the camera. I'm the only person that there's that who has their own camera. Woohoo! It just saves me the hassle of getting up and going to the chair. I really appreciated what you said. Correct me if I'm wrong, or clarify that it was Domio's words perhaps, but I think the term was something like the original person before the karma kicked in, pre-karma. Was that, is that coming from Domio's words when you quoted that? or was that yours?
Yeah, it's the last line she wrote. So this word, which has the same meaning as original face, refers to a person who is one with the original source that exists before karmic conditioning.
Okay, yeah, that's
that, that was my transliteration of her.
That's great, and I love that. Like, it reminds me of the Gigen Rinzai, the Zen master in the other tradition, who had his famous quote was, "There's an original person coming in of your out of your face at all times." You know, how it's just right there. You know, that that original person that before all this stuff of, you know, desire and aversion and all that stuff and preferences and this, that, and other, before that kicked in, you know, there was this original person that didn't have any of that. And that is the true person that we're striving for. And like the spoiler alert that that original person is literally everything and everyone, you know, connected. So I hadn't really thought about it in that way until you quoted that. So I appreciated that. The use of that that imagery, pre-karma.
Yeah. So let's take Denny from the. Go ahead, Denny.
Muted.
I think she's muted, actually.
Oh God, that's an ongoing problem for me. I wonder if I would be free of that. I really appreciate this paragraph. Well, I guess you focused on the first two lines of it, and I really like the way you you know, looked at the different translations. The thing that I think I'm kind of wondering about is the idea that that there's some kind of boundary to the Dharma, because I guess I think of the Dharma as permeating everything, and so I'm wondering, does that boundary exist only when you start to seek it, if you're looking outside of yourself for it instead of realizing that it's already there? Or is he really referring to some kind of boundary that perpetuates itself in the Dharma?
Well, I came to look at it after studying this for a while, in the way that he's trying to teach. And in teaching, sometimes you need to change perspective for the student to understand something. And so if you're discussing a rather nebulous, like I mentioned, concept that, you know, if you think of the Dharma as being all everything, all pervading everything, and for many people that would become, it's just too vaporous. It's just so indistinct. But if you could say there's borders to this, you know, you get it, and you're wandering, you know, in the forest looking for this thing, and you think of there being borders around it that contain it, that gives you some better concept to hang your hat on in vernacular, some concept that you can picture in your mind, that there is a place that you can go to get this learning or this teaching or this training. And he does, in the second sentence, drop that whole thing away and just move on, you know. But he uses that to first say that when you're first starting out, you're wandering around not knowing where you're at, and you're far from the area, the place of the Dharma. But you can get there. Does that ring true to you?
Yes, it does. Thank you.
Of course.
I was just thinking some more about what Denny was just saying, and I think it's interesting that there's discussion of boundary, because later on in the reading, like we did during the chant today, it talks about fish can swim in the water forever and never run out of water. A bird can fly as high as it wants and never run out of sky. And if they ever did leave the water, leave the sky, then they would die. And so I think that in that second sentence that you talk about, when you get the transmission of the authentic Dharma and you become, an original root person, in that translation that you gave, that maybe you realize your nature is that you are like that fish or you're like that bird, that you can search as much as you want and you'll never reach the end because it's everywhere. And if you ever did find the border and it exceeded, then you, like the fish or like the bird, would die also. It's kind of my thought from thinking on that reading today.
Interesting. Thank you. Jinryu?
I was just going to add to that last comment, and Denny's comment started this whole thing and made me think of it. But going back to the first two sentences of that very paragraph, the whole paragraph is set up as, when you first do this, this is what it looks like. But then after a while, you realize this is what it looks like. So he says that again about whether the boat is moving in the water or whether the coast is moving, and how we perceive our own body and minds when we're first starting out, and dealing with our discriminating mind. The kinds of things we think mistakenly. And then after a while, if we can keep our minds clear, we can return to right here, right now, which is where everything is and nothing is.
Yes. Thank you, Jinryu. That's very good.
I want to ask, I'm actually curious, Bob, you're welcome to feel that if anybody else feels like they have some understanding of it. With those two lines, what I find really interesting about them, and I'm not really sure what to make of it, is that, we a little bit like what Jinryu was saying, like when you first start out, this is what it looks like. And then maybe when you get it, this is what it looks like. But what I'm really curious about is that those two things don't seem to connect to each other. Like, for me, it's almost like their structure is not parallel. Like, when you first seek the Dharma, you're way away from the boundary of the Dharma. But then when it's correctly transmitted, we're not talking about boundaries or Dharma at all. We're talking about you as an individual person. It's almost like the comparison is it's not even really there anymore. I'm having a party, I guess. I'm not exactly, like, I don't know what to make of that. In the first part, we're talking about boundaries and you're straying far from it. And in the second part, we're talking about, well, you're an original person. Does that have anything to do with the boundary of the Dharma?
I think it's, to me, Mick, it's a literary tool to introduce the concepts, because when we're first searching for the Dharma, we're nowhere near it. But to illustrate being near something, you have to have some border, some boundary, some thing, physical thing to be near. And I think that's what he's getting into with that portion of it. And then the second sentence, when it's correctly transmitted to the self, it becomes within the person and is all pervading. And so it, you can't get any closer to it because it's within that person. It's been assimilated into the person's selfness. I'm really stepping beyond my comfort zone in philosophy here. I'm not currently adept at philosophizing about this, but the whole that's how I see the concept, where you start with the simple stuff, and then the more specific stuff is the second sentence, just like Jinryu was illustrating to us. Does that answer your question, Mick?
I think it's close. I think I'm getting there. I think I get it. Because like I guess what I'm trying to say is like it just I liked what you said about incorporating. And again, I'm not trying to like get you to answer it. I just my thought is like, okay, well, why didn't he just say when one first seeks the Dharma, you stray far from the boundary of the Dharma? And then when the Dharma is correctly transmitted, you are right smack in the middle of the Dharma. You know, like you're in like you know what I'm saying? It's almost like he switched what he's talking about to now like I think what you said is starting to kind of like piece some things together.
Yeah. That's what happens when you try to translate poetry from other languages and then from, you know, 800 years prior. 800? Yeah, something like that. Okay, I think Denny was next and then Jinryu.
Yole was next.
Oh, Yole?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Thank you. So all this stuff is very confusing for my little brain. But one of the things that I was thinking, so when you first start out, like anything, when you learn something, there are limits to your understanding of anything when you start out. And you hit those edges and those boundaries of your knowledge. And once you understand, boundaries are limitless. So basically, there are no boundaries to your understanding once you grasp whatever it is that you're grasping. And so it brings it back to you. You are really the limiting factor. Of what I'm trying to say, of understanding the Dharma, of finding the Dharma, you are the limiting factor. You're the one setting your own boundaries. I don't know if that makes any sense. I don't know.
Thank you. Now, Denny.
Yoli, I thought that made plenty of sense. And maybe I shouldn't do this, Bob, but I think it's helpful to, if you know the metaphor that he's using of the person being in the boat and looking at the shoreline and getting all mixed up. But if you're in the boat and you're looking at the water, it's all right. You are where you are and not looking at something that's far away from you to try to get your bearings. And so I guess maybe this is just the way, you know, we all try to make sense of this in different ways, but I just thought that if you're in the boat and you're looking across the water and you see the boundary of the land, you're looking outside of yourself. You're looking away from yourself. And that's why you get confused when you're sitting in the boat. But if you're just focusing on being in that boat and seeing the water, that's more like coming home to yourself and to your original face or your original self. That's, I don't know, that makes it a little easier for me, I think, but I still may be really off base.
That's good. That's good. Thank you. Jinryu, please.
I think it's very hard, at least for me it is, to discuss two sentences out of this essay when there's so much else in the essay that I find so helpful and so stimulating. And my favorite part of this whole thing is on the first page, one, two, three, the fourth paragraph, conveying oneself toward all things to carry out practice enlightenment is delusion. All things coming and carrying out practice enlightenment through the self is realization. I think that is exactly what he's saying in the two lines we're talking about tonight. So when one first seeks the Dharma, that is action on my part, and I am going out to grasp, and that is delusional. If it just comes to me and it gets transmitted through myself, my mind and body, that is practice realization. And I think that's what he's trying to say. At least that's the way I look at it. Wow. There are 100 different ways to look at this, I think. And I don't think any of them are wrong.
Thank you, Jinryu. I didn't see that parallel, but thank you for pointing that out. That's tremendous. And there in the Zendo, I'm not sure, I can't read your name in the screen.
Actually, can I jump in for just 1 second to cut you off for just a moment? Only because the folks in the Dirt Zendo haven't seen a comment that Emily made in the chat. The Cloud Zendo can see it, but you guys can't. I just wanted to read it because I think it's very good, and I want to make sure everybody sees it. And I think Emily was referring to when we were talking about, and I think maybe when Mick was talking about, there's the boundary, and then once it's transmitted, you're in it. And like, there's what, you know, how did you get from here to here? And her statement was, I think maybe because when it is transmitted, there are no boundaries. So he stops using the word. So just thought that was an interesting take that the Dirt Zendo should be able to hear as well. So thank you.
Yes. Thank you very much. And thank you, Emily, for sending that that message in. I appreciate the observation. Now, let's go back to the Dirt Zendo.
Eric, it's interesting. As I sat down, I read Emily's chart. It came up on the TV. So I happened to see it. And it was really cool because what Mick said made me think of something, and then Emily's kind of gave me language to kind of describe it a little bit better. And I think it relates a little bit to what Yoli had said too, but this is just my kind of take on it, what I kind of got from it. And it's similar to what I also got when we were chanting it. And I don't know if I'm going to bridge it or not, but I'm at least going to say what I think about what Mick got me thinking about was, it's like a child who is learning to walk. I'm a child development, that's what my master's is in. And the child will have to learn to stand and hold and grasp and cruise by holding on to things, maybe have a walker, maybe crawl and then, you know, wobble and things like that. And those are all necessary for the child to develop. It's not bad that he's doing that. It's if he doesn't ever move past that, he's limited by those very tools that helped him get to the place where walking wasn't even a thought, and therefore boundaries, as Emily said, is not even a concept because we don't think about those mechanics once we master that. And I feel like that's what Dogen is trying to get us to see is that all these practices we are doing are for a reason. We're looking at the coast for a reason, but once we misunderstand and think the coast is moving instead of us, it's time to change our perspective and realize, oh, this is something new. All these things got us here, but now we can't use them because they're not going to take us to where we actually are. They're not in reality. They help us get to reality.
Thank you, Eric. It's very good. Well, I thought I was going to be, you know, with a simple two sentences. I can see that there was a whole lot more to it than just the two sentences. Yep. This is why you can study Dogen for your entire life and not understand everything. Anybody else with a comment or question? Jinryu.
Well, I'll just introduce this concept. People may not like it, but in the summer when Domyo isn't here, one of the beautiful things is that we don't have to stay the entire time if we don't want to.
I won't tell if you don't.
Well, thank you all for putting up with me for tonight. I do appreciate that. And James, if you wouldn't mind doing the closing, I would appreciate it.
I always forget this. Okay. All right. We offer the merit of this Sangha meeting to all so that they may be able to attain the truth. All Buddhas throughout space and time, all honored ones, Bodhisattvas, Mahasattvas, wisdom beyond wisdom, Mahaprajna Paramita. Thank you, Bob.
Bob, great job.
Thanks so much, Bob.
Thank you, Bob.
It's really great, Bob.
Bye.